All right, folks, I think we're on the air this time. This is Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And I'm Chuck Gregory. I'm down here at the Betsy Hotel at an event called A Tribute to Sherwood Ross. Sherwood was one of our very first guests, and he is he was with us for a very long time, and I'm going to be quiet here. I'm just going to take this into the other room, and we're going to listen to the tribute. It's got about another half hour going, and so that first half hour of our show is dedicated to Sherwood Ross, and here we go.
And what the U.S. Peace Memorial Foundation does, it honors Americans who stand for peace, Noam Chomsky, Chelsea Manning, and my grandpa, by recognizing and documenting the activities of U.S. citizens, permanent residents, and organizations that have publicly opposed military solutions rather than diplomacy and global cooperation to solve international problems. The U.S. Peace Memorial aims to inspire new generations of Americans to speak out for peace and to end hatred, ignorance, greed, and intolerance.
War is a war of violent adventures.
The military honors its heroes and supports the warrior world with medals, promotions, ceremonies, and monuments. However, there are a few indicators that American society values those who oppose war. This results in a country that recognizes contributions to war, but often holds in derision those who call for peaceful alternatives. By creating the Peace Registry, the Foundation's goal is to help decrease the social barriers that citizens regularly face and must overcome before they publicly express anti-war sentiment, and to inspire more Americans to speak out for peace. The U.S. Peace Registry will help current and future generations understand how individuals and organizations have contested war and promoted peace. It will work to create a cultural shift where advocating for peaceful solutions to international problems and opposing war are considered just as valuable as military action for securing our democracy, and it will ensure that those who oppose any future war will have a broad arsenal to choose from. The American people need to know that war is not the only answer. That advocating for peace is just as important as fighting the war. We need to honor more than just war heroes, otherwise we immortalize a history of war, hatred, and intolerance as the social norm. Currently, the U.S. Peace Memorial Foundation only publishes...
You graduated.
So the American people needs to know that war is not the only answer, and that advocating and fighting for peace is just as important as fighting a war. We need to honor more than just war heroes, otherwise we immortalize a history of war, hatred, and intolerance as a social norm. Currently, the U.S. Peace Memorial Foundation only publishes a peace registry, but hopes to raise enough money to build an interactive peace memorial in Washington, D.C. for future generations to enjoy and learn from. If you would like to donate, please see me later on. You can donate with cash or check, or if you prefer to make an online donation, you can visit the uspeacememorial.org and click under their donations tab. Their foundation is a 501c3, meaning that
non-deductible.
Yeah, everyone knows what that means. Great. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you, Melanie. What a worthwhile cause. On the Peace Memorial Foundation website, if you do a search for, after talking to Melanie, she'll direct you to the website. If you do a search for Sherwood Ross, you can see a catalog of the works that are submitted to the Peace Memorial.
I can't do everything.
To round out our segment on justice, I would like to play a song. Sherwood was also having a sense of humor about the heavy things in life. He wrote a song that was very famous. It's called I Sliced Pastrami for the CIA.
Yeah.
So for those of you who have the book in front of you that Carl handed out, I'll invite you to turn to the page for the pastrami song, and we can sing it together. This song we presented on WLRN 91.3 and Folk Acoustic Music this past Sunday with Daniel Wolpin, who is back there. Hi, Daniel. He played guitar on this track and with Michael Woolman, and we sang this live in the studio. So it's archived in the Smithsonian Folkways, among other folk songs that Sherwood wrote. So I'm going to play the pastrami song, and I invite you all to just listen, and when the chorus comes, maybe we can sing along.
I ran a kosher deli down old Virginia way, not far from the Pentagon and the CIA. An admiral got our current two generals passed away. That's when my country called on me to trip for the USA. Oh, I was whisked to Langley in a foreign service car. Asked to go to Cuba, set up my deli bar. Irving sliced the same pastrami you fix here every day. Let's hope big enchilada one day will come your way.
Oh, I sliced pastrami for the CIA. 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 CIA.
They flew me in a southeast line, they dropped me in some hills. I floated to Havana, and I am proud to say, I set up a little deli, hoping he'd come in the way. Well, one day soon it happened, in the afternoon lunch crowd. The spirit of man entered, so arrogant and proud. I hear you got pastrami that could give the devil a fright. Don't be chintzy with the mustard, let's see if they are right. Now, I knew he was a tough guy, the mafia missed its turn. But where they failed with poison, I'd nail him with heartburn. They could not make his beard fall out, so that he looked less viral. Boldly, I sliced a double one, I'd freeze his Cuban smile. Oh, I sliced the
pastrami for the CIA.
CIA,
CIA, CIA, the CIA. CIA.
Well, Fidel took one flight from it, his sun brown face turned white. He began to choke and gasp, but he asked for another bite. Just then the sky split open, a voice cried loud and shrill. Irving, take back that pastrami, I said thou shalt not kill. Well, Fidel, he got angry, but I was out of reach. Miraculous, this hand comes down, I won't have twice to Miami Beach. I'm back in my old deli and somehow very proud. I sliced the scrubby for the CIA, and that's how I got.
CIA, the 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 Hey, Sherwood.
It instantly changed things. There really is something about Sherwood. And what I would like to do is open the podium for those of you who want to come up and say a little something about Sherwood or share something about Sherwood. And to open that, I would like to invite Evelina Galang, Director of Creative Writing at the University of Miami, Sherwood's alma mater. And she also hosted the University of Miami U Speak for many years, of which Sherwood was an active participant. And also Chauncey Meep with the Sun Sentinel. Please join us.
Once again, this is a tribute to Sherwood Ross.
So my name is Evelina Galang, and I direct the creative writing program at the University of Miami. And back in 2009, when I first started directing the program, we began this open mic series for the students. Donna Shalala actually said to me, I want an open mic series to give the students an opportunity to read and to invite the community. So, all right. So we started this little open mic series, and many of you I recognize here are some of our participants who would come on a regular basis and read with Sherwood. But Sherwood would come, and he was such a figure, tall, lanky, with a binder like this big. And it's so beautiful to hear everybody reading his poems tonight, because I was saying to Chauncey, my husband, I remember when he read that poem. You know, and sometimes we had, like, for example, we had one night, it was during February, during Black History Month. So, you know, the students are studying about a time, they're studying about the civil rights, and then we have Sherwood, who lived through it. And he would come, and he came up and he read Jesus in Missouri, right? So Mississippi. One of those M places. But, you know, the thing is, it was so great. And, you know, hearing his body of work tonight really makes me think. Today, I would have been here earlier. Today, we started our orientation with the MFA program, with the creative writing program. And one of the things I said to the students is that this is such an important time to be a writer. This is such an important time to witness what is going on and to document for people who are not here yet, or people who don't understand what's going on. This is an important time to write down history as we see it. And that's exactly what Sherwood has been doing all this time. And I am so grateful. I want to talk to you, Sherwood. I'm so grateful to you. I'm so grateful that you came and you became a part of our community, our creative writing community. You came back to your alma mater, even though we had all those young whippersnappers who didn't really always understand history as well as they should. You taught us so much. You shared with us. You are a great man, and I will not forget you, nor will the University of Miami. So thank you to Carl and to the rest of the family for inviting us and for hosting, and Sheena for hosting this moment as a way to hear Sherwood's words again coming from you, because when you read, you are the legacy. You are the legacy he leaves behind. So thank you, everyone. And now, Chauncey.
My name is Chauncey Mabe. I was the book critic for the Sun Sentinel in Fort Lauderdale for 22 years until 2009. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here taking part in the celebration of a long life well lived. We've heard about his contribution as an activist, as a poet, a musician. But I want to briefly talk about Sherwood's life as a journalist. As a journalist myself, I always think of myself as a reporter first and everything else second. You know, I don't work for a newspaper anymore, but I'm still a reporter. And I believe that Sherwood, I did not know Sherwood well, I only met him at U Speak a few times, but I believe that Sherwood, in his heart, was a reporter first. I believe that being a journalist and a reporter informed everything that he did. Because, you know, you probably all know that he worked at the Miami Herald, he worked at the Chicago Daily, he worked with Reuters. But even before that, when he was in the Air Force in the 50s, he uncovered a scandal at the Air Force base that he was on, where some sergeant or other officer was shaking down the recruits, you know, to get out of KP. And he exposed that, his investigative journalism. And you know, he was a journalist. He was covering the civil rights movement when he met James Meredith. If he had not been a reporter, he might not have ever met James Meredith. Now, here's where he departed from most reporters. Most reporters would see the movement and have complete sympathy for it, but still cover it as objectively as possible. But having the heart that he did, Sherwood was motivated to get involved right away. And one of the things that he did, this is so funny to me, he said he saw that James Meredith, with the march that they were about to do, was in mortal danger of being assassinated. So what did he do? He positioned himself to walk alongside him. I mean, the courage is astonishing. And when he went on later to, you know, represent the Urban League and to be and to have a talk show on the largest African-American radio station in Washington, D.C., it was not just a talk show where they took in calls and ranted about politics of the day. He had people call in about their slumlords, and he went out and investigated the things that were reported to him, and according to one of the obituaries, more than 800 slum apartments were renovated as a result of his work. So I can't quite figure out how he was a reporter in poetry, but you know, there is that saying that poetry is the news, the stays news. So I think he was a journalist to the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chauncey and Emily. What a really nice look into his journalistic background. But I think all his works, his past jobs, all came together in his whole life. To speak a little bit more about Sherwood and to share, I would like to invite Jeffrey Tucker. He has a poem to read, a little peek into who Sherwood was. And also Peter Lavella and John Rose.
It's very tempting to want to comment, but so many people are commenting about Sherwood. This is on turning 80, listening to Rodrigo. Sometimes I'm just content to sit and stare, even when there's nothing there to see. That happens now and then when you turn 80. Makes no difference where. Old men sit by the Atlantic or by the China Sea and look out upon the ocean as dreamers do. Actually, I'm mired in melancholy ecstasy. My mood of tranquility comes from listening to Joaquin Rodrigo's Concerto de Aranjuez. How do you say it?
Aranjuez.
Aranjuez.
Yes.
I knew I missed it. The Aranjuez, being a palace garden near Madrid, built in 1387 for the Spanish aristocracy. I'm intoxicated by Segovia's glorious guitar and the sounds of a bassoon solo heard from afar. My sky is painted from the palette of a composer blinded by diphtheria at the age of 3, who hammered himself into a piano virtuoso by incessant practice, who wrote 200 works for orchestra in Braille, dictating them note by note, unparalleled in the history of classical composition. So I sit and I stare, and above all, I listen. Rigid as a turtle sunning itself upon a rock all day. And while it appears I stare at nothing at all, fantasy, I float a mile high over Morocco and look down on camel caravans voyaging across the Sahara, whose blue skies stretch out a million miles every which way. Now I am transported by the sinuous woodwind's call, by a concerto for guitar to illuminate a garden wrapped in darkness, where night flowers bloom and the nightingale sings. Above the immense pink palace that is the Aranjuez, with its glorious, with its ornamental gardens of tranquility and peace, whose Corinthian columns recall ancient Greece, sculptured fountains where stone cherubim sing, and whose statues of handmaidens delighted the king. Come, walk with Rodrigo and take your ease amid pink cherry blossoms scattered under the trees. See the stands of sunflowers with their deep brown hearts, marble fairies spraying water like mischievous tarts. Yes, I turn 80 and I grow old, but I have Rodrigo's gold. A concerto in a night when dreams.
Hi, my name is Peter LaVilla. I'm with Sunny Island Speech, formerly from New York City, Hoboken, New Jersey. Anybody? I want to extend my thank you to Sheena for inviting me, and my condolences to the Ross family and to the friends. He was an admirable man. I've never met him, but like the previous speaker, I'm a reporter. 25 years, I've been working with daily newspapers back home, and I can say in all earnest that Sherwood Ross was a name in the newsroom, particularly when it came to issues of civil rights and issues dealing with people's rights. So I wanted to share that. I think I shared that with Eric earlier. But anyway. So I can tell you, if I read his poems, and I'm glad I'm pretty much in the end, because I would only screw them up. Anybody's poetry to read, I would mess it up. So I have a poem that I think might embed what he was all about. It's one of my pieces. And it's called it's a short poem. It's called, What's the Difference? What's the Difference? Am I looking at you? Or are you looking at me? I'm white. You're black. What difference does it make? We're brothers inside out, back to back. Mirror, mirror, standing tall. You look big, I look small. What's the difference? Nothing at all. For together we stand, together we fall. I want to thank you for inviting me.
Once again, this has been a tribute to Sherwood Ross.
Introduce Jonathan Rose. He is the host of the long-running Famous Last Fridays at Books and Books, and Sherwood is a regular fixture. Jonathan will come up and say a few words about Sherwood. And also, I wanted to point out the painting to the right, my left. This is a painting called The Lady in Red and the Sailor, and it was one of Sherwood's favorite paintings, which is, it's really nice to see that here displayed at Monument Study, and it was really nice to share that.
Hey, can you tell me how to get to that library place?
Oh, yeah. This thing is 11 up to the
turn. Okay, that's what I meant.
Up to the turn, then maybe somebody was calling this from the first one, so you can exit before you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So up to the turn, and
okay.
Then you go left and
okay.
Right.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist, featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Do I have to do that?
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Chuck, this is Mike, and if you would tell us about, kind of tell us again where you're at and what you've been covering. Give us a summary of what we heard in the first half hour.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'm at a tribute to Sherwood Ross. It's at the Betsy Hotel in South Beach. It was quite well attended, probably 30 people, maybe 40, and all kinds of people, not only Sherwood's relatives, but reporters from the Herald, the Sun Sentinel, people who participated with Sherwood in various events, poetry events. It was a very heartwarming experience, and I'm really glad that I was able to attend, and I hope that our listeners were able to hear just a little bit of it and enjoy it too. Thanks, Mike.
We still have a little bit of time. I contacted Anthony to see if he could go a little early, but I still have a couple of questions. You know, you had to do quite a bit to get this to us. And you also read at the event. How were you able to go to the Betsy Hotel, get set up, find your way around there, and then do your reading, and plus find a way to do the radio show? How did you get that all done?
Well, I'm not quite sure, Mike, but I think we managed. Now, Lorraine and I came down here in a lift, and we got here early enough that we could find out a place for me to come after the actual event to do the rest of the show. And that's where I am right now. I'm in a library, basically. They have writers' conferences and things in this room. Is really a very nice room. This hotel is considered one of the best in the world. It's a very famous hotel, especially for artists. Avant-garde people, just people who are into artistic endeavors. And they have lots of meeting rooms and auditoriums and a very full slate of people getting involved, listening to other people and viewing art. And so, hey, I feel very lucky to have been able to be a part of it.
Well, and it's a tribute to you that you went out of your way when you to do this. I mean, you had to go. You live in Fort Lauderdale, and you went. Well, it was about, you said, about a 40-minute drive to South Beach.
With rush hour, it ended up closer to an hour. But it was and Lyft isn't cheap exactly, but. I met Sherwood in person on one of our shows. He wasn't going to be able to do it live, and he came to my apartment in Fort Lauderdale, and we recorded it there. And so I got to meet him in person, and he was just a great guy. And the more I read about his life, the more amazed I am at what he accomplished. And I'm just really feel very fortunate to have met him and to have had him as part of our show. So,
and Sherwood Ross was in his 80s, right?
He was 85,
and he lived in his Coral Gables. I think he lived there. Is that in the Miami area?
Yes, it is part of Miami.
Okay.
And I guess he was frequently part of events here at the Betsy Hotel, and that's why I believe the hotel donated the room for this event. And of course, an awful lot of people donated their time. There was a Facebook Live thing. There was a thing on WLRN radio. Sherwood Ross was a very well respected guy, and it's great to see this outpouring of love for him.
And Sherwood was 85. He was a reporter in Chicago in his early career. He was also at the Miami Herald, and he was part of the civil rights movement. He was with James Meredith on his march, where James Meredith was shot. And Sherwood was also a poet, a musician. I don't know what else. I mean, you probably got a good idea for his what he was all about by hearing all these people.
He hung out in Greenwich Village with a lot of really famous people we've heard of, and played music with them and talked to them. He was in radio and journalism in New York and Washington, D.C., as well as in Chicago and Miami. He was a radio host at one point, and a playwright. His some of his songs are in the Smithsonian. Just an all-around extremely talented, extremely involved person.
I really appreciated when he would give I think he and Abba Bird and Frank Cordero were one of our first guests back in 2011. I'm not sure, but I think they were. And I appreciated hearing him every month, and he would really put a lot into it, a lot of heart and a lot of insight. And to me, I appreciated that he wasn't afraid to go the conspiracy theory route. I mean, he wasn't afraid to say those two words and to speak the truth, even though he was a regular mainstream journalist for much of his career. And I saw him as somebody who really speak the truth, and I appreciate that. And his bits, his pieces were like poetry. I mean, he really thought a lot about the current news of the day, all the way up to, I don't know how long he's been gone from our show, maybe a couple of years, but when he had his accident, his fall.
It was June 2016, the last time, the last show.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, is there anything else you want to say about the event, about Sherwood, that before we go on to try and get a hold of Anthony?
Well, no, I don't think so at this time, Mike. But just that it's been an honor, and I wish I could have stayed for the end, but it was pretty much wrapping up, and I wanted to come up here to a quieter area so that we could finish our show. So I'm going to be here at the Betsy till the end of the show, 10 o'clock, and then Lorraine and I will get our lift to get home.
I want to thank you for me and for the listeners for doing this, and just way to go. And shall we try to contact Anthony Racine?
Okay, that sounds good to me.
Anthony Racine is a retired freeway toll booth operator. He's been retired now for probably a few years at least, and he's also a zine publisher. He's an activist. What he does is he publishes zines. He puts together these magazines, and he corresponds with prisoners, and he publishes their writings, and he publishes those magazines not only to the public, but back into the prisons. And he performs a very, unique service.
Thank you. Later. Thanks. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message.
We'll try that again.
Hang up or press 1 for more options.
We're going to try again to reach Anthony Racine.
I have to figure out how to do this. I'm working on it.
Okay.
I may have to reach
him. If you are satisfied with your message, press 1 to listen to your message. Press 2 to erase and re-record. Press 3 to continue recording where you left off. Press 4.
Disconnect. Talk to you in a minute.
Chuck, Anthony sent along.
Hi, this is Anthony. Please leave a message and I'll get back to you later.
Okay.
Hi, this is Anthony. Please leave a message and I'll get back to you later. Thanks. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message.
Challenges here. Sorry, Bob.
You may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Okay, folks. Sorry about this. We're having a little challenge operating Skype from the iPad and trying to get the right people on. But we're just going to continue, and here we go. I believe we're calling Mike now, and then we're going to try to add Anthony again in just a minute. So. Mike, are you there?
I'm here, Chuck.
Okay, good enough. I just wanted to make sure I was back to that point. All right, here we go. I'm going to try to...
Did you see the number I sent you?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Figuring out how to dial it is another challenge.
Okay.
Could be the right one. I don't know.
Hi, this is Anthony. Please leave a message and get to you later. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, well, we're still trying to get hold of Anthony on the proper number. I'm not quite sure why he keeps wanting to dial the wrong number, or who knows, maybe that is the right number and we're not quite getting to him. We'll find out. Mike, why don't you chat a bit while I try to figure this out?
You can reach Anthony Rayson's archives, materials archive magazines at the DePaul University website. Look for special collections, Anthony Rayson's zines, thought bombs, DePaul University. Anthony is a retired freeway operator on the Chicago freeway system, toll booth operator, and he has retired a few years ago. I think while he was working, he was corresponding with prisoners and working with them with their writing, and they would send their writing to him, and he publishes their writings in his zines, which he pays for out of his own pocket. He produces those, sends them out to the world, also back into the prison.
Hi, this is Anthony. Please leave a message, and I'll get back to you later. Thanks. Bye.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. We did not get your message, either because you were not...
Well, folks, we don't seem to be able to get hold of Anthony. The number that we have for him, we keep trying to call and we keep getting voicemail. So unless you, Mike, can call him and put the phone in front of the speaker or something, I think we're going to have to skip it.
Okay. I don't know. He said
you're
he would be available, but
so I guess you really can't do that. I think for some reason, it keeps going to his voicemail. I think maybe he, his phone isn't in the right state to receive calls, and so we're having trouble calling him.
Okay. Let's put a number 7, Chuck.
Okay.
Now it's time for Thursday night, New American Dream Summer Stock Performance in the Band Shell and the City Park. Tonight, our New American Dream Company will present excerpts from a speech given by Harold Pinter while accepting the Nobel Prize for Literature 2005. His talk was entitled Art, Truth, and Politics.
Politicians, on the evidence available to us, are interested not in truth, but in power and in the maintenance of that power. To maintain that power, it is essential that people remain in ignorance, that they live in ignorance of the truth, even the truth of their own lives. What surrounds us, therefore, is a vast tapestry of lies upon which we feed.
The crimes of the United States have been systematic, constant, vicious, remorseless, but very few people have actually talked about them. You have to hand it to America. It has exercised a quite clinical manipulation of power worldwide while masquerading as a force for universal good. It's a brilliant, even witty, highly successful act of hypnosis. I put to you that the United States is without doubt the greatest show on the road. Brutal, indifferent, scornful, and ruthless it may be, but it is also very clever.
As a salesman, it is out on its own. And its most saleable commodity is self-love. It's a winner. Listen to all American presidents on television say the words, the American people, as in the sentence, I say to the American people, it is time to pray and to defend the rights of the American people. And I ask the American people to trust their president in the action he's about to take on behalf of the American people. It's a scintillating stratagem. Language is actually employed to keep thought at bay. The words, the American people, provide a truly voluptuous cushion of reassurance. You don't need to think. Just lie back on the cushion. The cushion may be suffocating your intelligence and your critical faculties, but it's very comfortable.
This does not apply, of course, to the 40 million people living below the poverty line and the 2 million men and women imprisoned in the vast gulag of prisons, which extends across the U.S.
The United States no longer bothers about low-intensity conflict. It no longer sees any point in being reticent or even devious. It puts its cards on the table without fear or favor. Quite simply doesn't give a damn about the United Nations, international law, or critical dissent, which it regards as impotent and irrelevant. The United States is now totally frank about putting its cards on the table. That is the case. Its official declared policy is now defined as full spectrum dominance. It's not my term, it's theirs. Full spectrum dominance means control of land, sea, air, and space, and all attendant resources. The United States now occupies 702 military installations throughout the world in 132 countries, with the honorable exception of Sweden, of course. We don't quite know how they got there, but they're there all right. The United States possesses 8,000 active and operational nuclear warheads. 2,000 are on hair trigger alert, ready to be launched with 15 minutes warning. It is developing new systems of nuclear force, known as bunker busters. The possession and threatened use of nuclear weapons is at the heart of present American political philosophy. We must remind ourselves that the United States is on a permanent military footing and shows no sign of relaxing it. Many thousands, if not millions, of people in the United States itself are demonstrably sickened, shamed, and angered by their government's actions. But as things stand, they are not a coherent political force yet. But the anxiety, uncertainty, and fear, which we can see growing daily in the United States, is unlikely to diminish.
This has been your Thursday night New American Dream summer stock performance in the band show in the city park. Excerpts from a speech given by Harold Pinter while accepting the Nobel Prize for Literature 2005, Art, Truth, and Politics. Chuck, I got an email from Anthony, and I'm going to respond to him. If you could go to a break with a song, if you can sing where you're at or not, or maybe hum quietly. I'm going to try and talk to Anthony, okay?
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and read about the George Carlin Back to School special sale on folders and pencils and lunchboxes and backpacks. Tell your children's teachers and principals and school board what you really think about them in their little school and little classroom with these special messages on the pencils and folders and lunchboxes and backpacks that will fall apart conveniently before next fall so you can buy some more cheap crap from Walmart and Target, your school supplies buddies. Some sample selections from the George Carlin Target and Walmart Back to School special sale on folders and pencils and lunchboxes and backpacks. Get a pack of 100 number 2 pencils with this special little message that your child can see every time she tries to calculate 2 plus 2. There's a reason that education sucks. Never going to be fixed. There's nothing you can do about it. The owners of this country don't want that. They don't want a population of citizens that capable of critical thinking, well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking, they're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. Get a new backpack with this message for everyone on the bus. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting screwed by a system that threw them overboard 30 freaking years ago. They don't want that. The George Carlin Special Collection. Thanks for listening, folks.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Larry Pinkney. We're going to try and contact Larry Pinkney in Minneapolis. Larry Pinkney was a member of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. These days, he's a radio show host, a writer, an author, and activist. And we're going to try and contact Larry Pinkney right now in Minneapolis.
Hello, Larry Pinkney speaking. Hello.
Hello, Larry. This is Chuck and Mike. You're on the air. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Maintaining one day at a time. Hope you're doing well, too.
Yeah.
Let me just get started very quickly. I want to say give my greetings, really, to everyone, to the audience, to you and Mike, and the listening audience. Let me say that we are living in some very, as the Chinese would say, interesting times. And as such, we perhaps should be more aware than any other time, meaning we need to be critical thinkers. I'm going to bring up something that I find really kind of ridiculous, but I think it needs to be addressed anyway. People may have heard this nonsense regarding so-called Omarosa and the so-called N-word. Well, let me be blunt. Let's understand a distraction when we see a distraction. And I hope I'm not going to hurt anybody's ears with what I'm about to say. But the late, great Dick Gregory, either his first book or one of his first books was entitled Nigger. Very good book, by the way, if you can still get it. Furthermore, Jamil al-Amin, a.k.a. H.R.E.P. Brown, wrote a book titled Die, Nigger, Die. Furthermore, Richard Pryor, the late, great Richard Pryor, used the N-word repeatedly. Furthermore, what's really important, and let us remember, that Hillary Clinton used a term that was far worse than the N-word. She referred to black people, and especially young black people, as super predators, not to mention the Democrat president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who both before, during, and quite frankly, after his presidency, was known to use that word repeatedly. So let's not be distracted, okay? This is a big distraction. We should be focused upon the policies. If the Democrats, so-called Democrats, have a policy, then put that policy forward. If you don't, keep quiet and go away. We need to think about and be concerned about jobs, our infrastructure, our care for our elderly, for our aging. We need to be concerned about avoiding a thermonuclear holocaust with Russia, especially, who is the second, militarily speaking, the second most powerful country just after the United States. But whether it's with Russia or anybody else, we need to be concerned about those issues. Do not be distracted by hypocrites. We must keep our eyes on the prize. Perhaps it's time to sit back for just a second, take a deep breath, and critically think about things. Do not be distracted. My brothers and sisters, be you black, white, brown, red, yellow, my brothers and sisters, these are the basic things that we, as everyday ordinary people, need to be concerned with and about. So don't want to go on and on and on, but I think that the times that we're living demand that we all be critical thinkers, all of us. Let's not get caught up in this snare of he said, they said, we said. No, let's deal with policies or the lack thereof. Let's be honest with ourselves, you know. So I'm very, very delighted. I'm not going to take a lot of time. I'm very delighted, as always, to be on the New American Dream Show. And I value the opportunity to speak with you, my brothers and sisters in the audience, and, of course, Chuck and Mike. But please, please, now more than ever, we're seeing censorship. It's amazing. It's stunning. And more importantly, it's unacceptable. We're seeing anyone who does not agree with certain positions removed from the air is actually taken off the air, taken off of Facebook, taken off of YouTube, etc., etc. This is insane. I have a dear friend, a late friend, who was very much involved in the so-called free speech movement back in the early 60s in Berkeley, California. I asked myself, he must be turning over in his grave to see at this point in time, at this juncture in history, the so-called Democrats who are doing precisely what they claim to be opposed to during the Joe McCarthy era. In any event, I'm going to end right now and say I love you all. Stay strong. Keep being critical thinkers. Do not let this system shut your mind down. Do not allow them to shut your mind down. Seek many sources, different sources, varying sources, because that's how we grow. That's how we develop, and that's how we can come to conclusions based upon our own research. So I urge everyone to do that. Take a deep breath. The struggle continues. Love you all. And I guess I'm done for this evening. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you, Larry. We always appreciate hearing your viewpoint. And hey, I'm not afraid of the politically incorrect words, whether they start with N or whatever.
That's right. That's right. I'm not either. And whoever heard of politically incorrect, you know, or politically correct, when you put the word political in front of it, it neutralizes whatever word comes after it. So I'm not either, you know.
Yep.
So take care, my brothers. Take good care. Stay strong. Love to you. Love to Mike and to the audience. Take good care.
You too, Larry. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night, Larry.
Good night.
Our next guest for the show is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis joins us each month from Benton, Mississippi. M.K. is an expert in the Bigfoot phenomenon. He is also chooses sometimes to talk about politics, maybe about the Zapruder film. We're going to try and contact M.K. Davis in Benton, Mississippi, and see what M.K. wants to talk about tonight.
Okay, well, we're dialing in. Once again,
We're broadcasting, or I'm broadcasting live from the Betsy Hotel in South Beach, Miami.
Hello.
Hello, MK.
Hello.
Hi. Hello, MK. It's Chuck and Mike.
Hey, Chuck.
The Stream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All right. I'm going to talk a little bit tonight about some of my processing methods that I've been re-examining old films with, and it's having fantastic results. For those who are interested in historical films, this is it's a revolution. If you go to thedavisreport.wordpress.com and click on the banner up at the top, the film strip, it'll take you to the latest posts. And several films I've worked on using this new method, and it's most effective on films that were shot at 16 frames or less, or even 18 frames. It's very effective. What it does in that type of film rate, frame rate, most of, well, at least half of the action, it goes unfilmed. It's lost between the frames. And the eye mind tandem has a hard time watching the film strip as a smooth, lifelike, motion. So it, 16 is the very minimum that you can take film at 16 frames per second and still maintain any degree of smoothness. What you develop after that is flicker, and you start to see the individual frames. And your mind can't make that gap, bridge that gap. It causes distraction, and you can't see the motions as smooth motions. In the case of the Zapruder film, it was shot at about 16 frames per second, 18 maximum. It can be shown at any rate, but when you shoot it in your camera at that rate, then you develop that problem with flicker. And when it comes to things happening rapidly, fast action, slow frame rate, this new method of processing improves that tremendously. So if you watch the clips that I have of the headshot, now a warning to the listeners here, it's graphic. And if it ever was graphic, it's even more so now, because it's a completely smooth action. And you can follow the concussion and the spray coming off the head and the ejecta, I call it, much better. And it's not that I particularly enjoy gore. That's not what I'm after. I'm not trying to make the film any more gorier. What I'm trying to do is produce a film good enough that an expert could look at it and tell some things about it. I've always been of the persuasion that as an analyst, that when I look at films, the film should tell the story. And this was a moment in history that like no other, and people still talk about it to this day. Those who are still around, that where was I when this happened, and almost everyone can tell you exactly where they were and what they were doing. A very important piece of history. Now, if you look at it closely, you'll see the impact, and you'll see that it's an inordinate amount of destruction to President Kennedy's head. It's more than it should be. And people have tried to explain it away as maybe perhaps a mercury-filled bullet by the CIA, which is kind of a conspiracy type thing. But with the new processing, it's beginning to look like something very different from that. I've got a couple of stills that I took out of the movie. They're up above the clips. And you can see by using this new processing that there are two paths of ejecta. emanating out of President Kennedy's head. Well, somebody told me, well, could it be just going through two different holes? No, no, that's not how it works. When you have a high-powered rifle or a high-speed projectile, when it enters somebody's head or anything else that's got liquid in it, it forms a wavefront, a shockwave. Normally, that shockwave will dissipate, and you'll have the destruction of one bullet, which is a lot less than what you see here. Because there, it's easy to see now that there are two paths of ejecta. It's beginning to look to me like there were two simultaneous strikes to his head. When that limo went to nearly 0 mile per hour, two different people took the opportunity. And when those wave fronts, those shock wave fronts hit each other, they converge in the head coming from two different directions. Then they hit each other and then they diverge. And that's what you see there. They're forming two ejecta paths. The energy is spent in two directions. That's not what you see and normally with one projectile. So that has convinced me that there were two shots taken almost at the same time. Probably as opportunistic because the limousine went to almost zero. It was at that very moment that the shots occurred to. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it right now. The destruction of the head, The massive head wound is better explained as two bullets rather than a mercury kill. It's not normal, and people have known that for a long time. It was way too much destruction, and so I believe that just looking at it, that one came from like behind. At the exact same moment, one came from over the right temple, and they hit him, and just almost instantly the same, and the shock wave from each one, as it expands out, hits the other, and they come out as a divergent ejecta, and so if I were to continue on to investigate the Kennedy assassination, I would definitely include that piece of information in there, and I would look for a good likely place that a second bullet could have been fired into the temple, just in front of the right ear. That's how much a little extra piece of information means, and then I've applied it also to the Patterson Bigfoot film. It has worked wonders with that film. That film was shot at such a slow rate that they had to speed it up to smooth it. And so you get this huge, over 1,000-pound subject moving as if it were made of styrofoam. And with the new processing, you could slow it down almost as slow as you want to slow it. It remains smooth with no flicker. And then you can see bodily functions taking place. You can see the hair behind on the side of the head and behind the ear as she turns her head. You can see that she does turn her head. She turns her neck, which many people for many years said she didn't turn her neck. She turned her whole body. Well, you know, you can see it. So all of that is information that you enter into the database, the general body of knowledge. And so I want to figure out the Patterson film. Well, now there's new information because you can slow it down and fill those gaps. And it could be applied to films, any film shot at a slow frame rate. I was looking at some of those old films of the Hopi dances out west that were shot at like 9 frames per second. It would work wonders. By the time I get through applying that to that film like that, it would look like video. It would look like real time, like what your eye sees. And that's just a fantastic thing. I'm just immensely, you know, hopeful to get other films, you know, to, it's a lot of work actually, but it's well worth it, because then you get a bird's eye view. You get that same look that someone would get gotten if they were standing there. You know, the real time, like with your eyeball seats. I'm chewing at the bits. I just can't wait. You know, I've got some more work to do with the Patterson film, more work to do with the Kennedy assassination. I've got the Nix film, which I haven't done that to. These are very happy days for film analyzing and for procedures and processing. And it's not the kind of thing that the average person gets joy out of. But I think when you run that, when you hit preview and you run your file, then that's the time for rejoicing, because these mysteries are going to fall. It doesn't add to, it doesn't take away, but the presentation itself and the way the eye and the brain interact to conduct the act of visualization, it means everything. Everything. So I also did, if you see at the top up there, very top, you see the famous Florida photographs called the Myakka photographs that were taken on the Myakka River by this lady who said the orangutan looking thing was coming up in her yard getting apples off her porch. And she took two quick photos fairly fast, and I decided to use this new processing to see if I could see if this thing did what she described it as doing. She said it stood up. And so I stabilized the two photos on those palm fronds in the foreground. And then I added the transition, made the transition frames and put them in, inserted them in. And indeed, that's exactly what you see. It shifts position and raises up. So, you know, now those two photos, you know, begin to take on more importance because, you know, once you see the movement, the little motion picture there created by those two frames, well, then you see that you're not looking at something that's dummied up. It's actually animated. So here we go with the Myakka. And how many more are there out there? I'm sure that this could be applied to so many things. So I'm looking so much forward, you know, as an analyst, as a technician, putting in its best form, and then as an analyst to try to figure the situation and whether we're looking at something that's real or hoaxed or real or misidentified, or all of those mysteries are going to fall eventually. And I'm just, you know, jumping up and down. Where am I at on my time? Am I close? Probably not yet, Emma. I got plenty more I can talk about. I found some stuff. You know, I took some pictures. I don't know if I got time to get into it or not, but I took some photos and video of an Indian mound way back when. It's been 3 or 4 years ago.
Actually, I think we're
about... I was going back through the photos.
MK, I think we're about out.
I have to save that. I'll save it for next time.
Okay, yeah. I think that's best.
I'll save it for next time. Hey,
thank you so much. You know, I really like hearing that, and always appreciate having you on the show.
Yeah, yeah, y'all just stay tuned. There'll be a lot of good stuff coming down the pike. I've never been this excited before. I mean, we're gonna push some of these old films across the threshold.
All right, sounds good. Talk to you then.
All righty.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles, a show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Baby Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Someone was killing a Democrat at Orange County, Ohio. I wouldn't have cared, but I was a Democrat. I didn't much care to have my throat slit as I pulled into the garage or have my brakes fail and plow headlong into the concrete culvert out on the bypass around the curb by the new Taco John's. Have my head split like a good watermelon, or have a 50-pound sack of sugar fall on my neck from the top shelf as I bent down to try to read the label on the All brand with my trifocal. Now, the prime suspect was Jesus Ohio, the terrorist. Left his high school classroom the same morning that 9/11 happened. They just took off. He'd seen all he needed to see. And be told lots of things. You get told lot every day things that don't happen and seem to bother people. They don't, well, it's printed in the press. The world thinks all these things happen. They never happen. Everyone's so eager to get the story before the fact that the story's there. The world's constantly being fed things that haven't happened. All I can tell you is it hasn't happened. It's going to happen. Donald Rumsfeld, February 28, 2003, Department of Defense briefing 29.
Is this heaven? It is when you're a big star. Channel 9, live at 5:05, coming to you now. It's me, dude, right in front of you on the TV. Move your foot. Hey, how's it going? What I love is how, as a member of the Homeland Terror Squad, I get to wear all these hats. Water tower spotter, undercover sheet judge. Now I get to be a member of the local news team. My mother, Yahweh, bless her dark little terroristic soul, would not have believed this had she survived the interrogation. I'm on-air talent. So I get to wear this terror orange suit, of course, and all these nifty buttons. Look out, the clouds are falling. Stop, drop, and roll. Just say no to terror. Journalistic army of one. I'm abetted and I like it. If it lasts longer than 4 hours, please consult a physician, veterinarian, or your local Shrine Circus representative. Okay, I'm back. Commercial now. We got some time. Today we got a visit from the studio. And some big shots from the Homeland Broadcasting Company. Here, Brokaw, here rather. Someone carrying along a big color cardboard photo of Herb Jennings on tour. They walked through, shook some hands, handed out buttons. Toothbrushes. These guys have the whitest teeth. I know they're going to start brushing from now on. Just a minute. Are your children at risk from terror? From Al-Qaeda? From Mexicans? From any Salvadorans you don't know about on your school board? Well, you might need a deck of good old boy sports trivia cards. Whip out one of these and pop the question to the suspected terror type. Who the fuck was Bobby Richardson? Who the fuck was Tom Trash? Who the fuck was Cleet Boyer? They don't know right quick, then. They're not from around here, are they? Blow your orange terror whistle. Have that sumbitch hauled off to the county concentration camp. Never be too safe. Have too much money or be too happy. We're good old boy, new 70s disco edition now available. Okay, now I just have to do the news. Now it runs another commercial. Anyway, you wouldn't think that much would go on at one of these local stations, but there's plenty. We're on the front lines of terror. Signs all over the hallways, in the dressing rooms that remind us. They're like those old Uncle Sam recruiting posters. Okay, we're back. Thank you, Jennifer, for that on-site weather update. You're kind of sweating. Take paradise, put up a parking lot. Just kidding. Little global warming humor. Jenny. Well, we seem to have lost our live remote for now. On the local scene, what you need is an orange terror tinfoil hat. Get one at your local newspaper or radio station. You stop by during Terror Month, you might get one autographed by Matt Lauer, Katie Couric, or one of your local television anchors. Hey, I get a break now until the 10 o'clock show, but won't be much of one. Catch a burger on the run, then it's down to shoot footage of the pit bulls and Rottweilers versus 9/11 truthers and evolutionists in the Coliseum. It might lead if I get some good bite shots. Well, that's about it. That's what we do. Channel 9 News. We keep an eye on the world, so you don't have to. Hello, ahoy, it's me, out here in the water, in the rowboat, me and Carl. We got this one oar in the water, we dropped the other one. One should do it. Homeland Bridge inspectors reporting for duty, sir, at your service. What we see here, and our report will show this when we find the pen, is that this bridge failed after a truckload of money headed for the military caused it to collapse. Wait just a moment, please, it's my beeper. Yes, yes. I don't know. Dropped it. Not me, Carl. Yeah. Yes, sir.
No, sir. Yes, ma'am. Okay, fine then. You smell good today, sir, ma'am. Of course, not through the phone. Impossible, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Okay, I'm back. Since we now have reports of the same type of trucks running into schools in Cleveland and Detroit and Oakland as well, and similar bridges in New York and Charlotte and Denver have also apparently crashed and burned. Oh, boy. Reports now coming in. Substandard housing in every major city in the United States, mostly black neighborhoods, it seems, that have somehow been run straight through by large trucks full of cash and large denominations headed for military operations all over the country as well as overseas. I guess they go to Stratcom in Omaha so we can have missiles in space. Cool. God knows we need that. And control the world for Warren Buffett. Man, lucky for us, he was there at off at that day to meet with George Bush. And at Fort Benning in Georgia, Vandenberg in California, Leonard Wood in Missouri. Lots of insurgent types in California and Missouri. I guess we need all those because we're so free. And we need lots of bases and soldiers and money in Germany and the Philippines and Colombia and Japan and Uzbekistan and Tajikistan and Dakotistan and Nevadistan. And we just cannot afford to buy everything. Our parents knew that. You have to make choices. You cannot have strong bridges in Minneapolis, smooth streets in Cleveland, warm schools in Detroit, and still be able to change the tires on our tanks in Turkey. Need to pay our taxes for that every year. That's what we've always done. We're more than smart enough to decide which is which. I'm sure we are. Somebody is thinking about that. Well, what we're going to do here is keep rolling, see what we can see, report back, monitor the beeper, kind of what we do. We get these orange terror vests. It's all pretty cool. Amazing how our president and vice president have this whole thing under control. Different ins and outs, scenarios, plans, and all those beepers. Hey, you have a good day, y'all, America. You got another beeper call. Just wait. Oh, seems we're going to be dragging for our other oar. Then either me or Carl will need to put on the wetsuit and goggles and deploy to the bottom. Carl is shaking his head. Don't you worry about a thing. Go about your day. I got this. Hey, over here. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I'm the scarecrow. You didn't see me? Really? Cool. I'm on double secret terrorist duty. Securing the homeland. Actually, to secure my homeland, I have to split myself into force and go to Europe. But I think this is somebody else's homeland. Oh, well. Always willing to chip in and do my part. I'm also a member of Sertoma, Kiwanis, and Noon Rotary. I love meetings. I'm a people person. Anywho, hot enough for you? What do you think? Is this the end of our American fascism period or just the beginning? Think we'll have elections in, 2020? Think Bush and Cheney and you think Trump will walk out voluntarily? You think like Wingnut Willie or Wacko Wanda, they might do another 9/11, put us on super secret double probation for our own good? That's a question of the day, the week, the year, right? I don't know. Just here to do my duty. Protect and serve and eat pizza. Be my motto, I decided. Anyone ever asked what my motto is? I swear that's what it is. I was in the post office yesterday. Rush Limbaugh is always on there loud. I wonder if anyone listens or if it's just on for noise, like having Paul Harvey on over noon in the cafe, so nobody has to talk to each other. I heard, though, Limbaugh talking about illegals, how they were dangerous. They were terror-type individuals. That's why I'm wearing this white hood and sheet out here in the garden.
I want us to be free. I want it so bad. My dreams are all about baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. I swear they are. I want our kids to be free to grow up and join the National Guard and go kill who need to be killed and have the freedom to come back and worship in the church of their choice and work at Pizza World. Stand here all day till my arm get tired. Make sure that happens. I love the old fatherland, motherland, Disneyland. I really do. I was born in the USA. I know all about the Santa Monica Freeway, the Ventura Highway, and the Hotel California. You come to Denver with a snowfall, the New York State Thruway is closed, man. Love boat. All that. I may not have been there, but I've read about it. Heard someone mention something about it once, maybe on TV. It's mine. I have ownership in the self-help book, Booga Booga Sense, and now it's all changing. We don't really like that. My grandparents or somebody way back came over here for some reason. That's sacred. They did things we don't discuss to make sure their kids and wives weren't mad at them and got the stuff they wanted. And that tradition continues to this very day. Here comes those GD aliens. They just stare. That bugs me. I think they know it does. They got a round ship. Blinking lights. I think I've seen them around here before. They all look about the same to me. Shoot, shoot, go on. Scat. Get. Okay, well, might be here a while. I don't seem to speak English. I'm kind of surprised. Go about your day. I got this. Goodbye to my Juan. Goodbye, Rosalita. Adios, mis amigos. Jesus y Maria. You won't have a name when you ride the big airplane. All they will call you will be deportees. We died in your hill. We died beneath your trees and we died beneath your bushes. Both sides of the river, we died just the same. Jesus, I would left that classroom on 9/11. Walked across the front yard and parking lot to the baseball field, just hitting the visitor's dugout. That's what I learned later. I heard that's when he wrote that letter to the editor that the old editor refused to print. Left his books in the dugout. He walked across town, walked into the Oaxaca Cafe and sat at one of the tables like a regular customer. Mother came out to ask why he wasn't at school. He nodded at the TV, high in the corner behind the front counter, at the images replayed of the towers coming down. Controlled demolition, he said, dejectedly. Mother brought him a chicken enchilada and rice with a cherry Coke in his special glass. Maria sat with her son, silently watched him eat, look up at the television. We stared deep into each other's eyes, knowing their world had changed forever. The mother knew because she had never seen her son quite like this before. Jesus, Iowa knew because he had never understood before. Talked with his parents late at night around the tables after the customers had gone home. Colorful blankets covering the front window, which the town cop could not see and could not see through unless he were to park his car and get out, which he wouldn't do in a million years. Parents tried to get Jesus to go back to school to finish his education. Jesus knew he'd already learned too much. He'd taken all his architecture textbooks and biographies, set them by the front door of the restaurant for Mr. Molini to find when he came for lunch on a Saturday. Jesus thought of people in town he could talk to. He watched the TV, listened to the news reporters prepare the people for war. Saw the yellow ribbons and stickers on the vehicles around town. The family did not answer the phone calls from the school. They hid Jesus like a dissident when the principal, Mrs. Sample, came to the restaurant to ask about Jesus. Jesus spent his days thinking and watching CNN and eating too many ho-hos. His father would hide him in the back seat of the car.
take Jesus and his dog Gypsy out to the county park in the country where Jesus could get out of the house and walk and be away from the TV. One day Jesus came downstairs for breakfast, said he was going to hold a sign downtown. "I'm going to do it," he said, "for God, for country, for honor." Just like on TV. "I'm going to fight for my country. Die if I must, like a dirty dog in the street with my tongue and guts hanging out." "No, mio!" Mother shrieked, put both her hands to her mouth. Father smirked and then became serious. "You cannot stop what is happening. What is going to happen?" said the father. Jesus gritted his teeth and became angry in an instant. His father put up a hand. Jesus sat down. "Go away," said the father, trying not to cry. "You must go away." He put up his hand again to stop the mother's protest. "Go to Mexico City, Oaxaca, Chiapas. See your people. See where you came from. That is where you were conceived, mio. This is not your country. We were wrong to bring you here. We thought it would be better." He put his chin to his chest and sobbed. Jesus sat in silence as his parents prepared for bed. He sat out on the porch thinking, ready to leap the railing if a police car came down Madison Street. The next morning, when his parents slumped out for coffee, Jesus had a Yankees gym bag by the door. His parents helped him with a list of relatives and a map, then hid him in the back seat for the drive to the bus depot in New Mannheim. They had coffee and split a sweet roll in a booth at Casey's before he left, never to return. "I'm going to share with you a vision that I had because I love you, and you feel it. You know all that money we spend on nuclear weapons and defense each year, trillions of dollars, correct? Instead, just play with this. If we spent that money feeding and clothing the poor of the world, and it would pay for it many times over, not one human being excluded, we could explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace. Thank you very much. You've been great. I hope you enjoyed it. Bill Hicks." Que pasa? Sitting here in Greg's Hometown Foods, store detective looking for terrorists, securing the homeland on the front lines, as always, just trying to do my part to ensure the freedom of my fellow Americans, looking for Mexicans who might be illegally alive, who do not have the proper stamp on the papers in their pocket, thus deserve to be separated from their weeping children, sent to wherever we want to send them in a hot, crowded white INS van piloted by highly trained intelligent professionals with their uniform butts smearing ho-hos in the vinyl seats. Could have been anything in life, but made the conscious decision to drive in the desert, sucking down dust for breakfast. All things planned by licensed Christians in churches, in chambers, in Congress, to keep poor people and their children from having frosted flakes in the morning, because their crawling from 0 to 1 might conceivably hamper us getting from 10 to 11. You can see me from where you're seated. You know I'm also sitting on the floor in the corner between the white milk and the tortillas, far end of the Mexican food aisle. My charge to find any Islamicist, Hispanianists, or other terror-type individuals. I'm also to tackle anyone I suspect of being from Nebraska. It's where I will find my insurgents. Though I do not understand their language, I know enough to know when they're hiding something or planning to meet with Jesus, Iowa, to topple the towers, collapse Casey, dump the Dairy Queen, and pillage Pizza Hut. Jabber's all about planning with other foreign types that seek out sales on box cutters and steel leaves. used to get here, had dust and weird stickers on their shoes from walking all the way up through El Paso and shit. And Agua Prieta, Douglas, all those off-brand towns. They have to leave their hometowns behind, or maybe, probably, grandma and their new puppy, whatever. My grandparents probably did the same thing. I could almost taste the salsa in the jars across the aisle. I like Mexican food. Everybody does. Never had any other terror-type food. Fred claimed his sandwich came from Iraq. That sounds like bullcrap. I wonder if I would like Afghan pizza or Nebraska corn. I'm undercover, as usual. I'm wearing a big, wide sombrero. My head's drooping to my knees. Well, I'm not sleeping. Sometimes I'm sleeping. Sometimes snoring, but I got a beeper. I'm wearing a new white t-shirt with blood red letters. Pinche puta, store detective. Pretty cool. Go about your day, I got this. And that's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream radio show. And we're broadcasting live from the Betsy, streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomflips.com. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Did he say anything?
Well, we seem to have lost Mike, but that's okay.
Sorry, Chuck, I was on mute. Sorry about that.
Okay, there you go.
I just want to say one thing. Thank you for all your efforts tonight in covering the Sherwood Ross tribute at the Betsy Hotel in South Beach. And thanks to you and Lorraine for all your work, and take it away.
If my words did glow with the gold of sunshine, and my tunes were played on the harp unstrung, would you hear my voice come through the music? Would you hold it near as it were your own? It's a hand-me-down. The thoughts are broken. Perhaps they're better left unsung. I don't know, don't really care. Let there be songs to fill the air, ripple in still water. When there is no pebble toss, nor wind to blow. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Revolution Radio.
don't see it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat masses, eating and drinking themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio, where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We gotta stop them. They're gonna kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started? Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution.